The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, Jeff Brohm, the head coach at Purdue, has decided he's going to stay at Purdue. And he's not going to Louisville, his alma mater. Instead, he's going to stay with the Boilermakers. Okay, so people in Louisville took that well, right? Well, one didn't. They got so upset that they threatened the high school that Jeff Brohm went to. This is like a really ridiculous story. This makes me freak out with people on sports, how they take it so seriously. So Jeff Brohm says, I'm going to stay at Purdue. This is where I want to be. Great. Fine. His decision. That's what he wants to do. Fantastic. But instead, somebody on Twitter decides that they're going to threaten Trinity, a Catholic all-boys school, because that's where Brohm went to school. And the person on Twitter said, we'll burn it down. If you see somebody with a gas can and a match, it's me. On Twitter. Maybe making a joke, maybe not, but nevertheless, the school canceled classes.
Yep.
Because of this.
Hey, you can't say bomb on an airplane. You can't.
That's right.
You can't say you're going to. This makes no sense to me.
Terrible story.
I mean, I also read that people were burning their Louisville jerseys.
Come on. People,
I mean, at
relax.
First, I thought I was reading it wrong. That, you know, it was like one of those like LeBron situations where LeBron left to go to someplace else.
Right.
It's like, oh, we're going to burn all of our LeBron jerseys. This guy, he never even set foot in the Louisville locker room.
He staying with a job. He's not leaving Louisville for anything. This is when people, I swear, this is what drives me crazy about fans sometimes. Listen, not everybody loves your team like you love your team, and that's okay. It's okay. Jeff Brohm loves Louisville, but he doesn't want to be the coach, all right? It's okay. You don't freak out and threaten kids at a high school or burn your Louisville jersey because they couldn't land him, all right? So he doesn't want to coach there. You know what? Find somebody who does. Oh, God, people. Threatening a school because a coach wouldn't leave a job to take a job for you as a fan because he doesn't love it as much as you love it? Get out of it. Oh, God. Unbelievable. But you know what? People go crazy with this stuff. And you know what? People believe people are the be-all, end-all. And Jeff Brohm might be on that list.
Gifting Map is your map for great gifts. Head over to giftingmap.com today. To SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios,
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so we were talking about Jeff Brohm staying at Purdue and the fact that that caused one lunatic fan on Twitter to threaten the school, the high school he used to go to. And it wasn't just that he went there. I think his brothers are still there coaching, and I think his father still works there. So somehow the Brohms are still connected to the Trinity School in Louisville, an all-boys school in that situation. Listen, I know people do this all the time, especially with college jobs. And I experienced this in Colorado when we had Dan Hawkins was the head coach for the Buffaloes, and he got fired, and Colorado was looking for a new coach, and they were looking. And one of the conversations we'd have said, who would be the best coach for the Buffaloes? And inevitably, it always came down to, well, I want somebody with CU ties. And we would go, wait a minute, what difference does that make? And they would say, well, I want somebody who gets the program. And I'm like, well, don't you want somebody who could win? And they were like, nah. And they settled on John Embry, who was a player for the Buffaloes, who, you know, played at Boulder, was a CU guy, had some experience in the NFL coaching. And he only lasted two seasons. He went 4-21. Like, I remember he only had four wins in his time in Colorado before he was let go. And then they got Mike McIntyre, who they just let go. But I remember arguing with people about this. It's like, what makes John Embry the best coach available? And they're like, well, he gets us. Well, what's there to get? You say, so what's there to get? You're not a special program. Most schools aren't special. Most fan bases aren't special. I hate to break it to you. You want the best guy that can coach your team. You want the best coach available. So what if he ate at the dining hall? Or so what if he hung out at the MUB when he was a student there? Like, nah, man, the only people that get us are the people who went to school. No, that's not true. Stop it. You're not a unique campus. You're not a unique fan base. So in the other problem that people don't understand about coaching, right? Because we hear this all the time, right? When there's a vacancy, they'll say, well, so-and-so will be interested. I mean, that's where he went to school. Well, yeah, maybe. But do you ever also think that maybe he doesn't want the business aspect of his life to be muddled in with his alma mater? That maybe his alma mater is his alma mater, and maybe he doesn't want it to be his boss. Look, when you're a coach at a football team, 90% of the time it doesn't end well. You don't usually quit. You usually get told to leave. And some people don't want that those two things to be mixed. Right? You are part of that program when you played there. You're part of that program because you went to school there. Some people don't want to go coach their alma mater. Some people don't want to have their paycheck signed by the school. Some people don't want to deal with the business end of it. Look, when you're a coach, you can drink the Kool-Aid all you want. Know the fight song. Know the traditions. Walk the same hallways and walk the same locker room. Do all that stuff. But the reality of it is when it comes time to hiring a guy you really want to be an offensive coordinator, you have to run it through the brass. And sometimes the brass says no. Or sometimes you want to raise for your assistants and they say no. Sometimes you want to raise for yourself and they say no. Sometimes you want better facilities and they say no. And you don't want those two worlds to mix. And I don't know if that's why Jeff Brohm wants to stay at Purdue. Maybe he says, you know what? I'd rather build what I've got here than rebuild there, even if I went to school there. Great. Great. That's fine. It could be any reason. But don't always assume just because a guy, you know, has a diploma on his wall with the name on it doesn't mean that's a free ticket that he'll always come home to coach your team when he makes it big. Look, they're talking about this with Dabo Swinney now. Dabo played at Alabama. He's a, who's the guy that's going to replace Nick Saban when he walks away? It's going to be Dabo. It probably will be Dabo because Alabama's a great job. It probably will. But it doesn't mean everybody that played at Alabama would leave their current situation and go run to Alabama. Most would because Alabama's a good job. But what if it was a crappy job? What if they were 2-10 instead of 12-0? What if they were 2-10 and couldn't recruit? What if they were 2-10 and Auburn was kicking their behind week in and week out? And you were at a successful program and you were like, you know what? I'm doing pretty good here. I'm winning the conference championships or I'm competing enough. I'm building something pretty cool. I'm noticing that we're getting better and better every single year. And then your old alma mater calls and they say, come over here. And you're like, wow, I don't really know. It's going to take years of recruiting to even build that up to the level of the rival. I don't know if I got that patience. So don't always assume that just because a guy, again, is homegrown from you, from that area, gets you as a fan, that he'd run to coach your team. Because it's all a business. People keep forgetting that. It's a business. It's like work. You know what it is sometimes? It's like working for your friend, right? Your friend may have a company, best buddy or yours, kids played Little League together, and you find yourself unemployed. Everybody says, you want to come work for me? You want to sell some of what? Like, yeah. And then you realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't be mixing these two worlds. I don't know if I like this. He's my boss now. I'm not as comfortable around him. We don't do the dinner thing anymore. Our kids don't do stuff as much anymore. I mix these two worlds and it doesn't mix. And some people, their college days are their college days, and their coaching days are the business. And the business isn't pretty, and the business is sometimes down and dirty, and it's negotiations, and it's bluffing, and it's lying sometimes. It's doing all the things you do to take advantage of your employment situation, and they don't want to mix those two worlds. It's that simple. And also, if it doesn't work out and you get fired, it stains your memories. It all comes. I played there and I loved it, but I also have this part where they had to let me go, where it didn't work out. I wasn't the answer, and it set me back. I was the hottest name in coaching, and then I disappeared for a while because I took that job. And some people don't want that. All right, 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. By the way, every year, and it's not always every year, but it feels like it, there's always a story that comes out, usually in the South, usually around drinking, that a person got shot because they got in a football argument. Right? Like one person's dead because they argued Alabama-Auburn or Clemson, South Carolina.
Florida
State. And they were drinking heavily. One person got a gun and accidentally went off, killed the guy. And there's always those kind of stories. And I think most rational people don't do that when they're having a sports debate. But you throw alcohol involved and gets a little crazy and a little ridiculous. But if you're threatening high school kids because Jeff Brohm's not coming to your school, do yourself a favor and check out of this thing called sports. Check out for a while. Go read a book. Go on vacation. See a psychiatrist. Check out of this thing called sports. Because something's overtaking your brain and you're not thinking very clearly.
That's so stupid.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Unbelievable.
And it's just, I mean, again, like I said earlier, it's like, this one just does not make any sense to me at all. I mean, I would get it if Brohm had, signed a deal.
And then left.
And then at the last second, I'm just kidding. Or can we use it as a verb? Lane Kiffin.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
If he was there
for a few minutes, like a couple
Lane
of games.
Kiffin, like Tennessee.
Yeah.
I would totally get being upset and, taking to Twitter to lash out. But this one, I mean, he just decided, nah, I'd rather stay at Purdue. I'm building something here. I want to see it through. What's the fault in that?
No, exactly. What I'm not getting is, and again, I know people just, there's some people have different mental capacities than others. But in this day and age, haven't we all learned the internet lesson, right? Be very, very careful of what you're posting. They will find you and they will call you out and publicly shame you. Like, didn't the woman who flew to South Africa and said she didn't want to get AIDS? Oh, no. And then she wrote something. She said, I hope I don't get AIDS. No, I won't. I'm white. And by the time she landed, she was fired and became a worldwide, scorn.
Yes.
By the time she landed, she made the tweet before she got on the plane. She was in the air. She made the comment, which was ridiculous and stupid and racist. She landed. By the time she landed and her phone got turned back on, she had realized the whole world had seen this and she was fired from her job. Right? It's the same guy. There was a guy who did a racist meme with Willie Taggart down at Florida State, where he photoshopped his head on it with a noose. They found him and fired him from his job. They found people stop going on the internet thinking you have anonymity. You don't have anonymity. They will find you.
Like that.
There are hundreds of stories like this. Don't make a threat against a high school thinking it's a joke. Don't make a Twitter threat against high school kids and think it's a joke because you didn't like the fact that Jeff Brohm was a coach. Look, they're going to find you. Give me a break with this. They know who you are.
Yes.
You're not hiding behind a wall. This isn't, you know, this isn't being like, oh, they'll never get me. I'll block it with six different firewalls. They'll catch you. Don't worry. They'll catch you. They'll find you.
Can we do a public service announcement right now about social media?
Go ahead.
Social media is Liam Neeson.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
They will find you. They will hunt you down, and then they will, well, they won't kill you, but they'll take care of you.
They'll take care of you. Exactly. Exactly right. Stop with this. Stop thinking, oh, this will be funny, and no, it's not funny, and you're going to get fired, and your life is going to be ruined. So there you go. I read an article. That girl, the woman who wrote that tweet, and when she got fired, it took her forever to get a job.
Oh, I bet.
Forever. She finally landed one. She finally got one. They had someone went to do an interview with her, and she talked about, like, it was 3 years later, and she said, it never left. It never left. Everybody, she would send out a resume. She wouldn't get any calls. Sometimes she got interviews, and I kid you not, she said she got interviews just out of curiosity, just to see what she was doing. Had no interest in hiring her. They just wanted to see, oh, yeah, what's your life been like since that? And she wouldn't get the job. It's an awful, awful, awful world out there in terms of how they'll treat you. Don't do it. You deserve to be treated. If you do a racist meme with Willie Taggart's head in a noose, you deserve whatever it's coming to you from the criticism and whatever is coming to you. But and if you threaten a school, you deserve whatever legality is coming to you, right? You caused a school to shut down because you threatened a school.
Especially
expect a visit from the authorities. Thank you.
Especially today.
Especially today.
I mean, you know, we're overly sensitive about our schools right now, and we have every right to be.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, first of all, you can't even make a threat like that against anything. If you did that against a bakery, we're overly sensitive about all of that right now.
Yeah, exactly. So just be careful, man.
You know, and for that woman, she had to wait for 15 minutes of fame died out, and look how long the 15 minutes lasted her.
Yeah, exactly. It was, fascinating article, because it reminded me of, like, wow, you.
If you anything, the power of social media.
You said anything.
The power of social media. You and I can sit here. If we decided, you know what, we still can't stand for what she said. Let's make a plan. Let's make a pledge right now. Let's get as many people. It's like a grassroots project. We could probably get her canned from her current job.
Probably. If you're still upset, you probably could still make noise. You probably could.
And that's the power of social media. That's what you need to be careful of.
Yep, that is exactly right. All right, we'll talk some about the Saints and Cowboys, the Thursday night game coming up, the rebirth of about the Saints, but the Cowboys are very a threat tonight against New Orleans with their defense. We'll talk a little bit about that, get some more thoughts on the NFL coming up this weekend on SB Nation AM.
Every day can't be hat day.
Take off your hat.
Stop worrying about your hairline today by visiting forhims.com/cheer. That's forhims.com/cheer. This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. We're close, convenient, and known for our guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So here's some little news and notes from tonight's game, Ron. The Saints can clinch the NFC South title with a win and a Carolina loss Sunday. Now, let's just think about that for a second. If they win tonight, and the Carolina loses, the Saints will wrap up a very tough division before we hit January, hit December, which was pegged to be a really tough division at the beginning of the season. They will have that wrapped up by first weekend of December. That's when's Sunday, December 2nd?
That's a good problem to have.
That's a good problem to have, is right.
And the Rams, the Rams were almost able to wrap up their division last week.
I think the Rams, if I'm not mistaken, only need a win, right? That's it.
They only
need a win.
Last weekend they got their win, but they needed the Panthers to beat the Seahawks.
Okay, and I think the Chiefs can clinch a playoff spot with a win. I don't know what that means. I mean, just a wild card.
They just can't clinch the division.
They can't clinch the division, but at least they know they're in if they beat the Raiders this weekend. So
yeah, but we're talking two teams that can clinch the division. I know. We haven't even gotten into December yet.
It's November 29th, and we're already talking about clinching divisions. If the Saints win tonight, they will tie Dallas. Dallas had an 11-game win streak 2 years ago after losing the opening weekend. The Saints won 13 in a row before losing to the Cowboys back in 2009 when they won the Super Bowl. They lead the NFL in points per game. Also, here's the other cool thing. In differential, they're outscoring their opponents by 153 points this year. Cowboys are only giving up 19.3 points per game. I'm not trying to get like super statty on you, but I'm trying to get you like some of the little tidbits for the game tonight. And Drew Brees,
you're trying to sell the game, is seeking
his fifth straight game with at least three touchdown passes and 110 passer rating. Oh, that's great. Well done, Drew. Fantastic.
Yeah, Drew sucks.
I know. Amari Cooper has played very well for the Cowboys. It looks like that was a nice addition.
He has. Still don't know if it's worth how many first-rounders?
Yeah.
All of them?
Yeah, pretty much. the Saints are favored by 9 points tonight. So go with that this evening. The Cowboys have the fifth-best rushing attack in the NFL. The Saints have the number one rush defense. However, the Saints are 30th in the league against the pass, but that's okay because the Cowboys don't pass the ball very well at all. But maybe with Amari Cooper, they might be able to exploit something on the Saints' defensive side. I don't know. We'll see.
Didn't we bring this here? The Saints are number one against the rush.
The rush.
But it's only because teams can't rush against them or elect not to, right?
They don't run a lot against them. I dug a little deeper into the stat to see if it was a true anomaly. Because, again, if you're playing a team like the Saints that put up points and then you trail, you're not likely to run as much against them. So you have to compete mano a mano if they're putting up points and you trail. You're going to have to pass the ball more, et cetera, et cetera. It's kind of like the old theory that if you have a quarterback that throws for 500 yards, he might have been on the losing end because if he's putting up that many attempts and that many throws and that much yardage, it's likely that he's playing catch up. You know, remember I told you about John Kitna being a good fantasy pick because he was going to throw 45 times a game.
Well, that was Blake Bortles was the best fantasy quarterback year after year because he had inflated numbers going into the fourth quarter.
Right. So I thought to myself, okay, if you're playing the Saints and you find yourself having to throw the ball a little bit more and running less, does that come into play? And it does in a way for New Orleans. They've only had 224 rushing attempts against them. Now that's low, and that's the lowest in the league by my analysis. So while they're only giving up like 3 yards an attempt per carry, and only 805 total yards, they're not seeing as many run attempts as some other teams in the league. So take it for what it is. Green Bay, for example, has seen 306 yard rushing attempts. The Jets have seen 320 rushing attempts. Arizona has seen 354 rushing attempts against them. So, I mean, the Saints are on the low end of that. So take that statistic for whatever it is. But Dallas can run the ball well, and if that gets shut down, Amari Cooper is opening up their passing game a little bit, so that might help. I'm just hoping this game, I hope I don't, you know, if I get late to it tonight, I hope I'm not turning it on the first quarter. It's 21-0. So
let's say I want to be
somewhat competitive.
Here's what I'm hoping for, and you know what? I think the NFL needs to relax a little bit on it. I don't know why it just popped in my head. I think I saw a commercial for Salvation Army. But last Thursday night, Ezekiel Elliott, you know, who famously jumped into the Salvation Army bucket.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And got fined. He threw Dak Prescott in there after Dak's touchdown run. And Dak got penalized, and I think Dak might get a fine.
Yeah. Didn't he put $21 into the bucket when he scored one time?
Yeah, but can't that just be okay?
Yeah, that should be okay.
I mean, they're not doing anything. I mean, if anything, they're raising awareness. Well, I guess it's against NFL policy to raise awareness towards
anything. Well, it's slippery slope. It's slippery slope because this is why they started letting the players do the cleats thing. So what was happening was that they said they came to a compromise because they didn't. If you said, hey, I'm doing this. This is a sick kid and I want to raise money for his surgery. How heartless can you be? And the NFL is like, it's not that we're heartless. It's that if we open that up, we have no idea what the players will use and use our platform for. I mean, we want freedom of expression, but we have a problem when we don't know all of these organizations and what it's for. We can't keep track of all of it. So they came to a compromise that you get to do the cleats thing. You get to kind of support, you get to run your charity through the league. League says, right. Great. You can do the cleats thing. That was what they were worried about. They were worried about the floodgates of every, I mean, there's a million cases of hardship cases and they just didn't want the league to be bogged down. I can understand a little bit of that, but at the same time, the Salvation Army is kind of like the league's partner, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons why they're there. In that case, if you want to fine them, say, look, we're going to fine you because it's not something we want to promote for everything we're doing. However, let's make a big deal about the fine going to the Salvation Army.
Exactly.
Let's do it that way. And so that way we continue our continuity on the rules.
Yeah,
and we're not bending it for other things.
We're not pocketing the money.
But we want to make sure that we make a big splash that you're writing the check to the Salvation Army and you do it again and you do it every time and everybody's happy and everybody's good. Because
that makes
better
sense. Feel better. I like that plan, Tony.
All right. There you go, SB Nation AM.
Back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, remember when the Jacksonville Jaguars had like a double-digit lead against the Patriots in the fourth quarter of the AFC Championship game and looked like they were going to the Super Bowl last year? I do, and now they've lost seven in a row. Their quarterback's benched. What went wrong in Jacksonville in such a short period of time? Mark Long, Associated Press, covers the Jags, helps us break that down. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Is this a Blake Bortles problem, or is this a whole team problem? What's going on with Jacksonville on this seven-game skid?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, Blake Bortles is not very good, as we all know. And, you know, I think general manager Dave Caldwell and team top executive Tom Coughlin were the last to figure that out. I mean, everybody else knew it before they signed you to a three-year, $54 million deal. So he's the biggest problem because when things aren't perfect around him or don't go well, really well around him, he can't elevate everybody else. So, and things haven't been perfect this year. They missed Leonard Fournette for six games already. They're going to miss him again this week. The offensive line's a shambles of itself. They're without tight end, their top two tight ends. They're without two of their top three running backs. So when you have that kind of injuries all on the offense side of the ball, you turn to the quarterback to pick everybody up, and Blake Bortles is incapable of doing that. So that was their offensive problem. Their defensive woes are probably more surprising. This is a team that, you know, was top two in the league last year in terms of turnovers and sacks and led the league in touchdowns on the defensive side of the ball, and they've been a shell of themselves this year. And that's been the surprising part. And they're busting coverages left and right and just not really giving the team a chance late.
In terms of Bortles, what took the team so long? I mean, like you said, most of us got the feeling like, man, this guy is not heading into that elite level. What took the organization so long? Was it wishful thinking? Was it a little ego because they drafted him? I know they changed personnel in the front office, but what took them so long?
Yeah, that's the big, they didn't actually change. General manager Dave Caldwell drafted him and he's still around. They brought in Tom Coughlin, but they kept the GM in place. So that's part of it. The real issue is he played well in the postseason last year, played turnover free football. They beat a bad Buffalo team that shouldn't have gotten in the playoffs. They got lucky in Pittsburgh and won a shootout where Bortles played pretty well. And then they had a 10-point lead at New England in the AFC title game. And it wasn't Bortles' fault that they lost that game. The defense collapsed. So you looked at Bortles and you went, well, maybe he's turning a corner. Guy played turnover-free football. He can lead this team. So you looked at it and you went, okay, this team was a play or two away from playing for it all in the Super Bowl. And that was with Blake Bortles. So you bring, you know, they rolled the dice. They brought everybody back. The defense pretty much intact. The offense, they added a few key pieces, and they thought they would take another run at it. It's hard to fault them for that because they did play so well late last season. But when you step away and break, really break it down, they went 10-6 in the regular season last year, and five of those 10 wins came against four backup quarterbacks and a rookie starter, Deshaun Kizer, who's no longer starting in the league. So that's five of their 10 wins. So really, against the rest of the league, they went 5-6. Snuck into the playoffs, beat a bad Buffalo team, as I said, got lucky against Pittsburgh with the defense making some plays, and then they match up pretty well against New England. So when you step away and look at it, it's like they really didn't do anything last year. So I think that's the big, it was misevaluation on across the board in terms of, you know, where they were, who they were, and what Blake Bortles was. And now they're paying the price.
So that, given what you just said about last season and now going into this season, are they retreating to sort of what they kind of were? I mean, maybe 3-8 is a little on the low scale, but they were never really like a 13-3 caliber team. Where would this team be under normal circumstances?
I think they're 500. If everybody's healthy, if Leonard Fournette plays all season, if the offensive line's intact, I think Blake Bortles plays better. Because when they can run the ball, they look at least competent on the offensive side of the ball. So if everything's intact and everybody's healthy and Blake Bortles has a clean pocket and has a running game to play action pass, then I think they're probably a 500 team, which is what they were last year against the last place schedule. They were 5-6 when you take away four backup quarterbacks and a rookie.
Yeah.
So that's probably who they are, up and down, hit and miss, a lot of close games, a field goal here or there. Probably, when it's all said and done, probably right now sitting at 5-6 or 6-5 and hoping for a wild card.
That is great analysis on that season, and I don't think I've really heard that kind of detail as to where they got the success. Does the average Jacksonville fan know that? Does the average Jacksonville fan today understand that maybe last year there were a lot of things that went right that you just can't count on, or are they massively disappointed because they're 3-8?
Well, it's a little bit of both. They are massively disappointed, and they're massively, you know, dumbfounded by how badly it's gone. I mean, it's this thing with off the rails in a hurry. They were 3-1.
Right, they
beat New England, and they looked like the juggernaut of the AFC. They were talking so much smack. They were talking the talk, and everybody thought they were going to go into Kansas City and win, and they got smacked around. And it's just been debacle after debacle since. They haven't won. This is a funny thing. They haven't won since Doug Marrone ran up the score against the team that passed on him, the New York Jets at home. They scored late with a minute left and a blowout already, and then he went for two because, quote-unquote, the chart said to go on for two.
I remember that.
It was really to stick it back at the Jets a little bit. So, and they haven't won since then. So you talk about the football guys. It was a 31-12 game, 29-12 when he went for two. So they haven't won since. So some of that is, you know, a lot of people think that a little bit of that is karma. But I think it's been a reality check for the fans that this is who they are. The defense, again, has been the surprising part. People thought, you know, they'd be better offensively even with Blake. And now you're at a crossroads. What do you do? Can you get rid of Blake? How do you blow it up? Do you go draft another quarterback and basically start over and reset the clock on this thing? And you got a lot of veterans on that defense side of the ball you got to make decisions on.
Yeah, that was where I was kind of going next is, okay, so if you do say, okay, we're parting ways with Blake Bortles and we're going to start all over, we're going to get go in the draft and get a young kid and groom him again. This is a team that was, I thought at least, Mark, I thought they were building to this point in the first place, right? I thought they were, all the draft picks were supposed to lead to what we saw last season, which is a team that has finally turned it around and been at least a consistent contender for the playoffs.
Yeah, that was the plan. Listen, they had seven draft picks last in April. They spent the first six of those seven on players they didn't need, guys to build down the road, replacements. for starters. So they looked at it and they thought it was built. And everything they did was, this thing is built and we're just going to build for the future, add a few reserve pieces and move on. And it was probably the biggest mismanagement in the league, certainly the biggest mismanagement in franchise history, to go in there and have draft picks and have quarterbacks available, and you did nothing. And you re-signed Blake Bortles to a three-year, $54 million deal when you could have kept him on the fifth year of his rookie deal and just paid him $19 million. You end up giving him $20 million, and you're going to cost yourself another $20 million next year against the cap. So it really was a debacle from the top down, starting with Tom Coughlin.
You know, we can play Monday morning quarterback with Bortles, but at the time, I mean, he was the UCF guy that had him in the Fiesta Bowl, looked the part. But was that a popular pick at the time? I mean, local guy, I get it, but was back in 2014, was he the take Blake Bortles pick?
No way! It was a shock. I think most people thought they were going to take. I think it was Amari Cooper was on the board. I think Khalil Mack.
Khalil Mack was
one.
On the board, yeah.
Yeah, Khalil Mack was the big one. I'm a year off. Khalil Mack was the one. Everybody thought they were going to take. Oh, Sammy Watkins. I'm getting Cooper mixed up with Watkins. So everybody thought it was either going to be Sammy Watkins, the big time playmaker out of Clemson, or Khalil Mack. And they went with Blake Bortles and shocked everybody. And so, either one of those picks would have been better than Bortles.
Yeah, because I don't remember that.
Go back to. Their real issue is that they built a team to play in 1970, maybe 1980.
Yeah.
Because they want this team that's defensive minded, run the ball, pound the football, milk the clock, play action. That's not today's NFL. That is yesterday's. That's your grandfather's NFL, your father's NFL. Three yards in a cloud of dust, punt, played field position, good defense, and hope to win in the end. Wear people down. That doesn't work now. The rules are against you. It is all set up to score 40 points a game, and the Jags can't do it.
Is Bortles a popular guy in the locker room, or was it frustrating for the other players when he wasn't delivering?
Super popular guy in terms of who he is. He's a great guy, great teammate. He's actually, I think, going to be a great guy down the stretch here as a backup to Cody Kessler. He's not going to be a cancer. He's not going to be pouting on the sideline. He's actually going to be really helpful. His mentor was Chad Henne, who did that for 4 years in Jacksonville, who basically kind of sat behind Blake and ate an S sandwich, wanted to play but couldn't play. And, but you just do the right thing and be a good teammate. And that's what Blake's going to do. But there was some angst earlier this season in terms of the offense not pulling its weight. There wasn't a ton of public finger pointing, but there certainly was some private, hey, listen, we can only do so much of the defense, or the receivers going, hey, listen, the guy's throwing awful balls. It's not us. So there was a lot of that. And I think there's some relief now that it looks like they're finally moving on from Blake.
Mark, great stuff. I appreciate it. Mark Long, again, Associated Press, covering the Jacksonville Jaguars. Really good insight on what's going on there. I really appreciate it, my friend. Thank you very much.
Anytime. No problem.
You got
Thank
it. You. Mark Long, good. So, and the best, and I said it to him, the best analysis of last year's schedule that I have ever heard. I mean, you just look at last year's schedule, and hey, listen, I'm not going to, I mean, besides the fact that Jacksonville was winning a ton of games and it was a little surprising, I wasn't getting too detailed into the Jacksonville winning ways when they finished 10-6. But he's right. I mean, they played a last place schedule. They played a lot of backup quarterbacks. I mean, that's an interesting way to view the success. And again, it's not like they went 14-2, right? I mean, they got into the postseason and they beat Buffalo and then they beat the Steelers and then they found themselves in the AFC Championship game. And then they come in this year and all of us put the, okay, it can only go up from here, right? Now you've got a team that can run the ball the way they want to run the ball, play defense the way they want to play defense with all of those picks that they used on the defensive side of the ball and bringing in some free agents on the defensive side of the ball. Blake Bortles looks like he's figured this out in terms of what his role really is. He's not going to be Drew Brees, but he's not going to be a 100-yard, per game passer with 10 attempts. He's somewhere in the middle, about 220, you know, 180 to 220 type of quarterback. They don't want him to throw a million times. They started to, you figured out, okay, things, this is what they're going to be. A tough team. It's going to be very tough to play defensively. They're going to hit you in the mouth, and they're going to run the football, like he said, 1970 style of football. It's not going to work. But that's kind of where we thought. I thought this AFC South, with Houston being healthy, Andrew Luck coming back, the Titans making the playoffs, Jacksonville making it to the AFC title game, I thought this entire division would be great to watch, good drama all year, battles in the division that were going to be really good epic, and we have not seen that. Jacksonville is back to being the doormat. Tennessee has no identity. I'm not 100% sure I buy in on the five-game win streak for the Colts, because look who they played. I love Andrew Luck, but they played five terrible teams. And the Texans are fantastic, right? That's now that division. It's almost a complete opposite of what I thought. 800-777-2907. It's Tony D and Ron Culver, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, back to the Blake Bortles situation. So Bortles was drafted in 2014. That was the draft that Jadeveon Clowney was the number one pick in. And he's right. Khalil Mack was still on the board for Jacksonville when they took Bortles. Sammy Watkins, I think, went ahead of him. But here's the thing. That quarterback class, listen to the quarterbacks that came out of that class, right? Bortles went third overall, right?
First quarterback taken?
First quarterback taken. Okay. Third overall to Jacksonville. The other two quarterbacks in the first round of that draft were Johnny Manziel and Teddy Bridgewater, who the Vikings jumped in to get. Remember when they traded with Seattle for that final pick to get Bridgewater on that final day? Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo, Logan Thomas, Tom Savage, Aaron Murray, A.J. McCarron, Zach Mettenberger, David Fales, Keith Wenning, Taj Boyd, and Garrett Gilbert. That's it. That was the list. That's the list.
That's a Hall of Fame list right there.
All of those fifth round, sixth round. There were four guys taken in the sixth round at quarterback. So Bortles wasn't – there wasn't like a huge, gigantic – like, you know, we say the year of the quarterback, there's five guys that could go number two or three. There doesn't seem in 2014, unless you believed in Johnny Manziel more than anybody else.
I think shame on us for thinking the 83 quarterback draft was yeah, right. Number one.
Yeah, that didn't include Zach Mettenberger. Yeah, I mean, how
14,
could you
– come on.
And Keith Wenning at a Ball State – was on that list, drafted by the Ravens.
Who doesn't remember that guy?
I used to like Taj Boyd at Clemson, but I don't hear about him anymore. And Garrett Gilbert as well. Yeah, SB Nation Radio.